Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. We are very fortunate today, as we are on all of our podcasts. We have an amazing guest today, Mr. Isaac Smith out of our Mobile, Alabama office. Isaac's a principal in our firm, and he runs our Mobile operation, does a masterful job there. Isaac knows all media, all regulations, but we're going to talk specifically today about environmental compliance audits. Isaac has practiced that and been exposed to that throughout his career. And we thought it'd be good to just visit and have a conversation about things that you might need to know as you consider the environmental compliance audit and the process and things associated with it. Isaac, good morning to you, my friend.
Morning, Todd. Glad to be here.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. And this is going to be a fun conversation because, you know, environmental audits, there's a lot of different ways they can be triggered. Or you might come to a point, you might be some kind of acquisition and you want to do an audit on the facility before you purchase it. This isn't due diligence. This is more on the compliance side. The regulators may come to see you. There's just a lot of different ways. So I guess to get started, what are some different types of scenarios where audits can occur? And are there any circumstances that could trigger an audit?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, they can definitely be triggered by different ways, as you alluded to. Basically, there's two types of audits, you know, audits that you yourself are going to drive, an internal audit where you're proactive and wanting to look deeper into your compliance procedures and make sure things are looking good. And then there's these third party audits, which there's a large bucket of those as well. And those include the EPA, state agencies, even some kind of certifying body like responsible care or ISO certification. It can be something that you're being proactive and it can be something that's completely unexpected or unannounced like an EPA or agency audit.
On that note, you know, I think about an audit and I guess in my mind, I'm a little bit simple the way I think. It's like you get a regulatory agency that shows up unannounced and they're there to audit your facility and your processes. That's really not quite true. That's kind of a bit of an oversimplification. So what does it really look like as you are faced with an audit prospect?
You know, there's, like we said, the internal and external, and generally people think of the external audits as unplanned and the internal audits as planned, because obviously if you're driving an internal audit, those are going to be conducted on your own schedule with regards to cost and, you know, the topics that you want to cover. But even the third party or external audits, whether they're from the state agency or the EPA, those many times those can be planned as well. If you think about it, you know, if you want to get the best bang for the buck and ensure that the time is used wisely, a lot of those external audits, they give you a little bit of heads up, tell you what they're going to come look at, make sure you have files available or even, you know, ask for them up front. There's not as many unplanned inspections. If they are, they're generally shorter in nature, maybe a couple of hours, you know, just kind of come in and check things out. But, you know, some of these audits can be a week long or even longer, and those are going to be usually a planned event because there's just so much involved on both ends.
No doubt. And one thing that I think about a good purpose of an audit is, you know, is we put a facility in operation and work hard to take the information, the processes, their outputs, their outflows, maybe modeling to it. We basically build a permit for whatever medium, be it water, air, waste. And you've got the permit, the facility's in operation, but things change. Things slightly modify over time. And I always thought the audit makes a great tool to make sure you're aligned with your permit, because the last thing where you think facilities can get in trouble is they have an operational permit, but because of circumstances and nothing nefarious, but they change, and an audit can sometimes bring you back to, hey, here's how we should be operating. Here's where we sit. We've got a disconnect. And then what we do. Do you find that to be a fairly true scenario?
Yeah, definitely. In that case, you would hope that's an internal audit that you drove yourself to be proactive, to identify those things. You know, like you said, stay on top of things. Things do change over time, not just the operations, but people. And even regulations, sometimes there are new regulations that are promulgated that weren't in existence when the facility was first built, and you can get pulled into those. So it's definitely good if facilities have the money available, because these things aren't cheap. If you're going to do an internal audit, sometimes hire somebody, an outside firm, to come in and do that. And they're time consuming, but they definitely can, you know, pay dividends in the long run.
Have you ever seen in your career, Isaac, have you ever seen something to where, you know, you've done an audit and there's a really large separation between where the facility is operating today and where the permit is set for, a big variation?
Not really. I mean, generally, you know, most facilities try to do what's right. They're trying to stay in compliance. Sometimes there are some somewhat gray areas, or what they believe to be gray areas, and they believe they're in compliance. When if you really read the letter of the law or the rule, you know, it's not. It's usually a misinterpretation of the rule. It's highly unlikely, or I say it's highly unlikely. It's less likely these days that people are just knowingly out of compliance. You know, usually it's something. Like I said, a misunderstanding with the rule, and or like I said, new rules come into existence, and sometimes those do slip through the cracks. If you're at a very small, what we would call a mom and pop facility with not a lot of corporate, you know, support or oversight, there are rules that come into existence, and it's your job to know that they, you know, they're out there and to comply with them. And if you don't identify those at the time, then they just simply, you know, never get incorporated into your permit. And, you know, many facilities believe it's the state agency's role to make sure that happens, but that's incorrect. You know, the responsibility falls on the facility to maintain compliance and to make sure the permit contains all the applicable regulations.
Well, I tell you, I think you really hit the nail on the head here too. As you think about that possibility, if you're doing it as an internal process, that's good, that's healthy, that's also ensures that you're operating correctly. So that's exactly the correct lens to look through. You know, another thing I would think about too is, you know, depending on what type of facility it is, source materials can change a little bit over time too. And sometimes your permit doesn't really contemplate a change in, you know, say it was a wood processing plant and you were getting timber from a certain area, but all of a sudden your area changes, or the type of, you know, timber you're bringing in changes, that makes a change on what your emissions would look like, I would think.
Yeah, you definitely can have situations where your permit just doesn't accurately reflect the constituents that are in your, you know, exhaust gases or coming out of your stack. Sometimes it could be in your favor. You know, you have lower emissions than what your PTE looks like, your potential to emit. And sometimes you could have new pollutants altogether or an increase. And like you said, there's a difference in softwood versus hardwood, you know, for your wood products example. But yeah, definitely in the chemical industry, you have a lot of different raw materials, and even things that are just in really small concentrations, you know, can really be impactful if they're, you know, hazardous air pollutants, and you're near any kind of a threshold. So yeah, a lot of things to keep in mind.
So I think, Isaac, you've done a masterful job, with not with much help from me, setting the table here. Let's get to some best practices. What can your facility do to prepare for a planned audit? You know, you're getting ready to do an audit. What does your facility need to do to get ready for that?
Yeah, well, as you can imagine, there's a lot of things that you're going to need to do. Hopefully, some of these are things that you're doing on a routine basis already. But when you know you have an audit forthcoming, you know, you definitely got to get your house in order. Everything from the communicating to the folks at the front gate, the administration building, whoever, you know, that that the auditors are going to be, you know, arriving on X date or whatever. You need to treat them, you know, you don't need to treat them like they're somebody like insanely special, you know, but you don't need to treat them like they're some third rate person either. So make them go through, they should go through the safety procedures. You know, you should act, request their identification and make sure they are who they say they are, ask for their credentials. But then you just need to, once they're on site, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do. But, well, I guess before they're on site, housekeeping, you know, we've all heard the old adage, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. Well, you know, their first impression is going to be when they pull up at the gate or in the parking lot or whatever. So you need to make sure that the facility grounds are in good shape, because that's going to give them paint a picture of what they're going to find when they get in the gate. You definitely need to get your files in order. You know, they're generally, some of these planned audits, they're going to request some information ahead of time that will be transmitted digitally via email or through some type of document room in the cloud. So you may need to make sure those things are in order. And then when they are on site, make sure you have somebody that's able to help, you know, retrieve the requested documents in a timely fashion, whether they are hard copy or electronic. A lot of the deviations that are found in these audits are because people have the information and it's just not readily available, or it's in some, you know, file storage area and they can't access it for 3 or 4 days later. So you're supposed to be provide these documents, you know, on site. And generally, if we're talking about air, you know, you're required to keep them for 5 years. As we all know, 5 years of documents at a facility can be a copious amounts of information. But in the days of electronic, you know, files, it's a little easier. You know, you definitely need to make sure whether this is planned or unplanned, you have somebody tapped to support you or even fill in your absence. Murphy's Law, you know, means that if you're on vacation or out sick, you know, the facility is going to have an auditor or inspector show up. So regardless of how well you plan, you know, life happens sometimes. So make sure you have somebody else adequate who can fill in your absence. You know, you may have a nicest guy in the facility, may be in maintenance and he can talk to anybody, but he might not be the best person to be escorting anybody around the site. So you definitely need to make sure you have somebody who can adequately fill in your absence.
No doubt about it. And well said, and that's good practice. And, you know, it kind of even cuts the other way. I've even known a facility does a really good job of their operations and good housekeeping and shape. Sometimes the regulators are drawn to go back to that facility because they know that they're going to have a really good inspection too. So, but it's good practice. You want to be that type of facility that's in such good shape, the regulators look forward to visiting that if it is a, you know, regulatory audit or unplanned audit. And you said this earlier too, audits can have lots of different levels. You can do a full-blown facility audit with an outside consultant. You can do it internally with your team staff. It can be a desktop audit review. You could even audit one particular function in your plan too. So they look lots of different ways, but I think you threw out some really good tips there and how to prepare for that and be ready and think through not only the actual operation of the facility, but also how it's perceived, that first impression. The person, you know, taking, if it's an outside audit, taking them around, making sure, you know, the good communication skills. So well done there. So now the million-dollar question, Isaac. So you do an audit, and let's say it's internal, and you find a compliance issue. What are some options of self-reporting? How do you manage that?
Yeah, that's a slippery slope for sure. You know, a lot of this is going to depend on your corporate operations and what your internal counsel has to say about things. And that's a whole nother topic. You know, we could do a whole topic on confidential audits, attorney, you know, audits being done, internal audits under attorney-client privilege. Sometimes those are done when you know, maybe find a little bit of an issue and you want to really peel back the layers and see if that's a systematic problem or it's kind of more of a one-off thing. Been involved in a lot of those. But, you know, assuming that it wasn't done under privilege and you've uncovered some things, different states have different policies on audit. A lot of them are fairly open to self, you know, reporting or self-policing, where you can disclose the violations. You, depending upon the state you operate in, you need to look into those and be aware of them, especially before you conduct an audit, where you understand what your options are afterwards. And then there's actually an EPA, what they call an EPA audit policy as well. Generally, you need to disclose those potential violations. And I say potential because, you know, sometimes it may take you a while to really nail down if it's a violation or not. But if it's a potential violation, with the EPA disclosure rules are generally 21 days. And that's, you know, the beginning 21-day period, you know, from the close of the audit or whenever you really became aware of that information. So there is a, if you just Google EPA audit policy, there's a webpage specifically devoted to that. And then it also has some frequently asked questions. So it's a slippery slope as far as what you should do. It's really going to depend on your risk appetite, the level of, you know, non-compliance that you've identified, and then, you know, what your internal counsel or management has to say about the disclosure as well.
Well done. So it can be said, if you're out there listening, you're thinking about wanting a audit, there's not a better group to reach out to than Mr. Isaac Smith and PPM Consultants to help with that procedure.
It sounds there's definitely a lot that goes into these things, whether they're being driven by the facility or after the fact. And yeah, you definitely need to talk to somebody who's well versed in them and has been around the block a time or two to understand what you're getting into, whether it's on the front end or on the back end of one. You know, in the end, the best way to really prepare for these audits is by knowing, you know, the regulatory requirements that are including your permit. That sounds like an obvious statement, but you want to give a good first impression, you know, that you're aware of all those and you don't want to throw up any red flags. And then, you know, having a strong internal auditing program would be something I would advise as well, and definitely keeping organized records. And then, you know, you need to implement good housekeeping practices every day, because you just don't know when they're going to come knocking on the door.
Spot on. Just trying to make a shameless plug there. Great wrap up to it, Isaac. This has been such a treat. Thank you for making time to do this. I know our listening audience really appreciates it. If you'd like to get in touch with Isaac or myself and talk more about this topic, you can reach out to us. Best way to find us is go to our website, www.ppmco.com, and you can find a contact us, go direct to myself or Isaac. We'd love to visit with you. Isaac, any last words for our audience?
Nope. Enjoy the conversation. And like Todd said, feel free to reach out if you have other questions on this topic.
Isaac, thanks so much. This has been a real treat to do. And to our audience, thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for more podcast, and this is PPM Simplifies.
Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.